the Chaplain Candidate Orientation Lecture. This lecture entitled The Character Guidance
Today the subject is character guidance, which the Navy calls character development and the Air Force moral leadership. And I should like to spell out the purposes of this program, its implementation, and then some of the results. There are four developments in the last century and a half which have created the terrifying potential of modern warfare. They are the invention of the internal combustion machine, the refinement of techniques in mass production, the harnessing of nuclear power, and now, last of all, automation itself. And it is these factors which have made war and military service a total national commitment today. But in all of this gadgetry and all of this sophisticated technology, man is still the fundamental instrument. And if the soldier, the airman, the sailor is not persuaded of the value of his nation or of its objectives, all the weaponry in the world will not do much good. And let us remember that the person who is in our military service is a citizen. He is a member of our citizenry and is not a mercenary. And no nation is stronger than the faith of its citizenry in the principles on which the country was founded. And so the people in a free country like ours have the job in every generation to rework and to re-earn the bases of freedom in order to make it a viable faith. Now, we are in a very awkward position in America because freedom is basically a moral concept, and nobody wants to teach the moral principles that undergird freedom. The public school teacher doesn't want to do this because he or she will immediately be suspect and may have a big quarrel on his hands on the grounds that he's using public education to teach religion. Some of our homes, of course, teach moral principles and live them. Yet on a massive scale, in keeping with the size of our nation, there is no instrument which engages in the instruction of the moral principles that undergird a free way of life, except for the military service. This is one of the curious paradoxes of our society. Where you would least expect it, that's where this kind of instruction and guidance is being given. And that is what the Character Guidance Program proposes to do. It proposes to take people who've had civics, who've had American history, but never have been alerted to the moral ingredients of freedom, and to spell these out for him so that he may have some appreciation of our way of life and its value. For freedom is based essentially on two assumptions, namely that there is a God and that there is a moral law. Unless you assume these two, you cannot talk either about justice or about freedom. For you cannot, for instance, talk about unalienable rights unless there is a creator who endowed us with them, as Jefferson well knew. You can't talk about justice unless there is some principle outside the system of laws to which one can appeal in the interest of greater justice. This is what our Supreme Court did, for instance, in 54. When it came to the question of school integration, it appealed to a higher principle, or to a higher law, as it says, namely that all men are created equal and are therefore entitled to equal education.
not separate but and equal, but equal. The character guidance program, or the moral leadership program, has been underway in the military establishment of our country for the past 21 years. I'd like to give you a brief historical sketch of its background. We really first began to face the problem of irresponsibility and wholesale disruption and destruction in 1946, after World War II. This was a natural and normal result of having gone through a war. This happens after every war. In 1946, the Chief of Staff of the Army asked the Chief of Chaplains whether he wouldn't want to get involved in some kind of plan to overcome the massive irresponsibility and carelessness that was manifest among the troops. And the Chief of Chaplains came up with a recommendation that at Universal Military Training Headquarters, Fort Knox, we experiment with a program which was then called Citizenship and Morality. This consisted of 25 units of instruction in such things as what is freedom, what is justice, what is authority, what's the function of a military, what is a nation, and all that kind of thing. This worked so well, beginning with October 1946, that in January 1947, the Secretary of War ordered that this same kind of training be done throughout the military establishment, that is, throughout the Army. The Navy wasn't in on this yet. In September 47, then, the name of this undertaking was called the Chaplain's Hour, and then it wasn't until November 48 that we picked up the term character guidance, which the Air Force later abandoned in terms of in favor of the term moral leadership. Let me just read you one paragraph from a conference paper for the Annual Command Chaplains Conference of January 62 to describe the general philosophy of the character guidance program. The character guidance program is designed to aid and to assist the commander in the delicate and important task of ensuring that the men under his command truly reflect and are motivated by those principles, values, and ideals which are part of the American character and which motivated the patriots of the past. It is not a religious program, nor an adjunct to it, or a substitute for it. It involves neither religious nor political indoctrination. It is not an anti-communist program, although the subject of communism is discussed when appropriate to a particular topic. It is rather a positive program to aid in maintaining within the Army a moral climate or atmosphere which cultivates and encourages a continuation of the sturdiness of character and moral convictions essential for the accomplishment of the national will and purpose under any circumstances in the face of any enemy. Let me do a few definitions just to orient ourselves as to the bases from which this program works. You very seldom read the word character today, even in books on psychology. Where it is used, it is usually intended to be a descriptive term of what a person is as seen in his actions. It is a neutral term, morally speaking. In this program, it is not a neutral term. We understand character in the character guidance program as that kind of life which is organized around a central moral conviction which has worth and validity. That is to say, character is understood in this program as being more than the sum of individual virtues, like courage and sacrifice, all added together. It is rather a clustering of virtues around a central principle according to which one makes the decision of everyday life. Now, the analogy that is used in the literature of the program is that of an architect's arch. Here is an arch. These stones, before they're organized, are just a pile of rocks. Once you organize them, you can hold them together by the keystone. Human character is like that. You and I are a bundle of emotions running off in many directions at the same time until we get ourselves organized and make our decisions every day according to some keystone conviction, some overarching principle which determines what we decide to do. Now, a keystone conviction, obviously, can be very selfish. If a man's keystone conviction around which he organizes his life is centered in himself, in personal aggrandizement, he will make his decisions accordingly and develop a certain type of character. But it will be negative, it will be destructive and dangerous. And so we put into our definition of character the modification that this keystone conviction has moral worth and validity. That, in other words, this principle be not self-seeking, but selfless. What can happen with a self-seeking principle can be illustrated, for example, from a little section out of Henrik Ibsen's Peer Gynt. You may recall the scene where a couple of visitors are going through a mental institution, and as they observe the strange behavior of the inmates, one says to the other, "These people are besides themselves." To which the response, very correctly, is, "Beside themselves? Oh no, here is where they are all themselves and nothing but themselves. That's what's wrong with them. They have organized their life around some egocentric principle." In the character guidance program, the principle that we like to commend to the truth here, the keystone conviction, is that of a devotion to freedom. For we feel that this flows right out of our history and right out of the philosophy, the political philosophy that created our nation. For as we examine the lives, let us say, of George Washington or Abraham Lincoln, whom we consider among our greatest, you will notice that their lives were organized around a devotion to freedom. And they were willing to risk their lives for the preservation and extension of freedom. So what we mean by character, just to repeat, is that kind of life which is organized, or which has organized itself around a keystone conviction that has moral worth and validity. If I might just swing in a footnote at this point, in the Christian life, the keystone conviction, of course, is something more profound than devotion to freedom. It is the virtue and element of sacrifice, to lose one's life in order to find it. Why do we use the word guidance? We use it because the program intends to develop the individual in such a way that he will, on his own, grapple with the real, serious moral problems of life. For you see, it is one thing to suppress vice. But it is quite another thing to develop a man who says no to temptation. In the Air Force, we call it moral leadership because we are convinced that with this kind of training, we can develop people who can exercise better leadership. They will have the kind of character to which others will respond in terms of respect and in terms of confidence. Those are some of the basic definitions. I go on now to the next section, which deals with the objectives. The central objective of the Character Guidance Program is to develop a sense of responsibility, S-O-R, the sense of responsibility. That was the melody, to use Dr. Kemmerer's phrase, with which we had to deal back in 46 and late 45. It was irresponsibility that we had to deal with. And so, as our central objective, we set down the development of a sense of responsibility. There are four things involved from a moral point of view in this program toward the development of this sense of responsibility, and let me just read them. We try to accomplish in the individual the following things. First, an appreciation of the moral fabric of the American way of life. We did create something new in America. The American way of life is not like that of Europe. For our founding fathers had the one chance, which comes once in 1,000 years, maybe, if that often, to move into a part of the world that was not occupied and inhabited by a civilization. They were able to take their time and read the best political philosophers of their day, pick the best principles out of each, and organize the nation accordingly. That's what they did. When, for example, Jefferson wrote into the Declaration of Independence that among our unalienable rights is the pursuit of happiness, he did something radically new. Our nation is organized to provide the occasion for the individual to achieve fulfillment. No European civilization was interested in that. This is part of the moral fabric of the American way of life. Two, to develop the individual to recognize the moral obligations and opportunities of the military profession. I tried to spell part of that out last time in underlining the moral aspects of the military profession. Third, to develop him in such a way that he understands the consequences of his own attitudes and behaviors. And fourthly, to develop in him a sense of service and sacrifice in the performance of duty as he devotes himself to standing up for the cause of freedom. Those are the objectives. Now, the implementation. This is a very crude diagram. The printed one looks a lot better. Better artwork involved. But how do you work with this? There are two sides to the development of a sense of responsibility. First of all, you have to spell out the principles involved. And then you have to indicate the techniques of application. So, under this central bullseye, there is this half circle, which we call the principles, which then has on top, as a corresponding half circle, technique. Now, what is the basic principle of the Character Guidance Program? This one, that man is a moral being, that he has been created to make choices, and that his character is the end product of the choices that he makes. And when we say that, we are combating two heresies that erode, or which help erode, freedom. One is the heresy that I am the product of my glandular construction.
that you can't blame me for anything because I just happen to be built this way. You've got a quarrel with my grandparents from whom I've got the genes. Well, where you argue that way, and there are many people who do, then of course you don't have to exercise any sense of responsibility. You can blame others. The second heresy is the notion that comes often out of sociology, namely, that I am the product of my environment. That if you want to make a man better, you change his environment so that that's better. If he's better off, then he will be better. Now, nobody's going to quarrel with the fact that there is some truth in both of these heresies. There always is in a heresy. But to say that you and I are only the product of our glandular construction or our social environment is to forget the central principle about man, namely that he is a moral being and that he has the responsibility to make certain choices against wrong and for the right. Furthermore, that he has been so created that he can do this. Now, we're not talking about justification by faith in that side of theology. We're talking about civic righteousness, to a point to which I'll come back a little bit later on. This is not free will in the theological sense. This is not trying to suggest that somehow we can decide in favor of God in terms of grace. But what it means is that we can decide, for instance, to vote. We can decide to keep ourselves upright in our paying of taxes and this sort of thing. Man is a moral being because he can choose and he's got the responsibility to do the choosing of the right against the wrong. Now, when you start spelling this out, you of course have to ask, well, what are the principles according to which a man makes his choices? They are spelled out in our society in the moral law, the Ten Commandments, and natural law. Unfortunately, we don't do too much in Lutheran theology with natural law. This is part of the loss that we experience as we move through the period of piety. It deserves revising. Well, when you move now to the top of this diagram, the half circle that corresponds to the observation that man is a moral being is that of self-discipline. A man can practice self-discipline because he is a moral being and can make decisions. Now, when you break it down, the moral law, the natural law, in terms of technique, you get personal virtues, civic virtues. And then in the diagram, in this full diagram that's broken down again, the personal virtues are spiritual virtues, natural virtues, political, social. And down below, the principles are spiritual values, social values, first and second tables of the law, natural duties, natural rights. And then this is spelled out in greater detail. For instance, the natural rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in our way of life. Not life, liberty, and the possession of property, which is the old standard listing of British philosophers, but life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So this is what the program proposes to do and spells out in terms of the materials that are made available. Now, what are these materials? The materials are prepared by a special board in each of the three seats of chaplain's office, either right in the office or somewhere else. In the Air Force, the board happens to be down at Maxwell Air Force Base, Montgomery, Alabama. Our moral leadership program at the moment in the Air Force is applicable only in the school program. We dropped the whole program for a while, mostly because it was getting out of hand and are rebuilding from the bottom. In the Army, a character guidance presentation is made once a month to all troops.
The materials are prepared officially for the chief of chaplains. He distributes them, and the individual chaplains make use of these materials. The basic volumes are known as Duty on Our Country. These appeared from the government printing office in 1951, six volumes of stuff, and are still pretty much the basic materials, which are reworked and modified. Illustrations are brought up to date by these various boards. It so happens that it was my job for 5 years to prepare these materials, and those materials are in these six volumes published by the government printing office in 1951. So the materials are officially prepared. A chaplain is not free to choose his own subject. Now, he can, of course, take the materials and rework them in his own way. In fact, he'll have to if he does the program properly. And by means of these materials and the instruction, the 1 hour a month in the Army and Navy set aside for this, there is a fivefold contribution that we want to make to the military establishment. We want first to develop an understanding of the nature of freedom and of its vital importance to the American way of life. And one of the things that's done in this program, for instance, is to go back to the Federalist Papers, which are the position papers of our founding fathers, where they spelled out what they proposed to do, also in terms of morality. Secondly, we propose to increase the performance potential of the men under command by developing a sense of responsibility in them. Thirdly, we try to prepare for more effective leadership in developing a better understanding of the nature of man, that he is a moral being, for instance, that he's not just a psychological entity, like Pavlov's dog responding to the ringing of the dinner bell. You cannot describe human behavior fully if you say what the psychologist says, S, given a certain stimulus, this will be the response. Unless you include in R the individual peculiarities that are in each of us and the ability to make a choice. Fourthly, to develop an aggressive spirit for the right, and fifthly, to aid in developing those qualities of character which make for leadership. These materials are presented by chaplains. Now, they wouldn't need to be. We've tried occasionally to turn this over to commanding officers, line officers, only to discover that they really don't have the intellectual background, philosophical background, to do this properly. Way back in 1928-29, when I was in the CMTCs, the Citizens Military Training Camp, the commanding officer often did this sort of thing on his own. There was no overall program. But today, it is the chaplain who does this. And since there are some chaplains, including also Lutherans, who find it difficult to reconcile themselves to the fact that this is part of the chaplain's program, I thought it might just be useful here in conclusion to point out once more that we are here engaged as chaplains in instructing the elements of what our confessions call civic righteousness. Furthermore, Melanchthon is very complimentary about civic righteousness. Let me quote from the Apology, Article 4. Now, although we tearfully assign this righteousness of reason the praises that are due it, Aristotle says aright, neither the evening nor the morning star is more beautiful than righteousness, and God also honors it with bodily rewards, yet it ought not to be praised with reproach to Christ.
cum contumelia Christi laudari. Civic righteousness belongs to the orders of preservation. It is the pursuit in the contemporary situation in America of maximum possible freedom and justice under order. Now, this is the most difficult thing to achieve in society. We take a lot for granted here in our country because we have never experienced how easily order can be destroyed. We had a sample of it in Detroit and Newark, a few other places. That the social order is not neutral, but that particularly in the political sphere, the demonic forces of chaos and anarchy are always particularly active. And that to combat the threat to chaos and disorder and tyranny, the other end of it, you have to have people who understand what freedom is, what it takes to preserve freedom, what justice is, and what it takes in terms of moral undergirdings to preserve freedom and justice. Well, that's what this program is all about, to develop people who have some notion, some fair notion, of what it means to live in an open and a free society like ours, which we better never take for granted. Well, that's a description of the program, and I'm sure you must have a question or two that comes to mind. So it is very paradoxical in a way that it is the military establishment in our country that is busy with these fundamental things of training people to appreciate the moral fabric of a free way of life. The churches should be doing it. The schools should be doing it. The home should be doing it. But as you well know, these agencies aren't doing a great deal about it, especially not our public schools. Yes, Tom. Not in the way it is presented. I mean, civic righteousness, yes, for a Christian is the fruit of faith. But you are not talking just to Christians. You are instructing all troops, regardless of faith. So the materials are not presented from that point of view. They are presented from the viewpoint that civic righteousness is a good thing for a nation. And a Lutheran chaplain will often say, or will sometimes say, I've said it a number of times, to the men, now this is not religion. If you want to know what religion is and what the motivation for this kind of life is, then you attend the chapel services on Sunday, which is a good plug for the services, too. And occasionally you have to remind men of this. You're not in a religious service. And part of our problem is that so much of Protestantism confuses this sort of thing with religion. That's why this Army statement is so emphatic. This is not a religious program. It doesn't supplement it, and it is not a substitute for it.
Now, where will we stay at?
As citizens. And in, you mean in?
No, in our job as chaplains. Will we do this?
Yes. Oh, yeah, it's required. Now, if there happen to be six or seven chaplains on a post, let us say, then one man will get this for 1 month. Next man will get all of the instruction for the next month. And it's a big job where you're dealing with thousands of men. You'll have 20, 30 instruction periods per month. So it kind of rotates where there are a number of people. Yes, this is a chaplain responsibility. And I thought the question meant something else. We do it because in our background we have some understanding of moral theology.
That's the philosophy. Yeah. Very well. Very well. The only thing they resent is some chaplain getting up there and goofing off because he hasn't done his homework. That they resent. But we've seen this so often, that where men prepare and make the presentation, the men receive it well, and it, as a byproduct, the chapel services that he conducts are so much better attended. Because this is where you sell yourself. If you can get across the point that you're not trying to take advantage of them, you're not selling anything, they'll soon feel this. There's no, I suppose there's no group of people more sensitive to that kind of thing than seminary students and troops. So. This is where you meet the men.
Which time they see them and make them see themselves as, like you said, as moral, as responsible.
Yeah. As citizens.
So, what you listen to them in the church? You're talking about honor. Or you're talking about freedom. You talk about character development.
I mean, you spell out on their level what I've just been talking about, that man is a moral being. In fact, one of the first lectures has to do with what is character. Or one other rule, and it's surprising how many people are not aware of the fact that there are three kinds of nations in the world. The secular nation, the demonic nation, and what we might call the covenant nation. The secular nation is one that officially declares that it officially ignores the existence of God. Let's do it that way. So that President de Gaulle, for instance, of France, would never refer to God or to prayer in any public utterances. The demonic nation, of course, is one like the Soviet Union, which says we take the place of God. And our way, our nation, is what we might call a covenant nation, which very specifically and openly declares its dependence upon God Almighty. So the President doesn't hesitate to pray in public. Eisenhower started his inaugural address, first one that way. We have on our coins, "In God We Trust." You never find that on a Russian ruble or a French franc, really. Well, there's a whole lecture on that, you know, this distinction.
In fact, that is our problem, you see. The two heresies I mentioned really have their source to a great extent in the sciences. Psychology,
focus on.
Oh, wait a minute. Wet blanket on science.
Well, some of the
sciences are there. Well, they just usually don't even discuss this sort of thing.
Well, I mean, that's the issue.
To which the chaplain will say, "Well, but that's not the whole answer."
I'm not arguing.
It has been decided by the people who run the military service. It has been decided. I mean, it's in the text. No, but please don't misunderstand it as a wet blanket on science. I don't know why that would. Doesn't work out that way. The local psychologist may kind of poo-poo it a little bit, but there isn't anything worthwhile that people, some people don't poo-poo. Anything else on this? Any further questions?
Yes.
What can we read further into this?
Well, in the Air Force, we have a correspondence course on character guidance. Why don't you pick up the Army manual from me sometime if you really want to read up on it? I mean, it's got all these guides. I have the Air Force one here, all these diagrams spelling out of the philosophy. Anything more? Here.
I can make an announcement. We finally settled on the procedure for getting the tapes of these lectures. Anyone who wants